Regardless of whether you listen to audiobooks, read them on an electronic screen, or still hold the paper version in your hands, the importance of literature in our lives can't be overstated. Science, history, culture, and politics are shaped by beliefs, and beliefs are shaped by interpretation, often crafted by writers. Reading the stories of people who have lives different from our own helps us learn about their and our place in the world. Tlingit author Ernestine Hayes joins us to discuss her book, Blonde Indian, today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Full Circle, delivering organic produce and artisan groceries, including Alaskan products, across Alaska. Learn more about Full Circle's partner producers at fullcircle.com/APRN.
And by
GCI, an Alaska-born and raised company connecting Alaskans from the Aleutian to the Arctic, from the North Slope to Southeast, and to the rest of the world. With more than 2,000 employees statewide, a proud supporter of Alaska Public Media. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. Books are critical for our personal and professional growth, and access to them can mean the difference between a child having success or falling behind. Today, we're joined by people who cover both the production of literary works and those who make sure we can all read them. In the studio with me today are Ernestine Hayes. Ms. Hayes is from the Tlingit Kagwantan clan. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. She is an assistant professor of English at the University of Alaska Southeast in Juneau and the author of Blonde Indian, an Alaska Native memoir. Welcome, Ernestine.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here today. Also in the studio with us is Patience Fredrickson and Rayette Sterling. Patience manages the Talking Book Center for the State Library. And Rayette works for the Anchorage Library. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Welcome.
This is a great group we've got in the library today. So two librarians with us today. So behave yourselves. Be quiet. No horsing around. Or at least that's how it was when I was a kid going to the library. Mm-hmm. Things are less somber and more lively at libraries today. Something we'll discuss. But let's start with Ernestine Hayes. Ernestine, your book, Blonde Indian, received an American Book Award, an Honoring Alaska Indigenous Literature Award, and won the Penn Nonfiction Award. Congratulations. That is fantastic.
It was actually shortlisted for the Penn Award, and it was shortlisted for the Kiriyama Prize, but that's still an honor. Thank you.
Absolutely an honor, yes. Your book weaves your life, stories from your grandmother, and some fiction together. How did you decide on this approach and not just a memoir?
Well, in writing, I managed to learn that there's a great deal of oral literature, influence from oral literature in Native American literature. And so that enabled me and empowered me to challenge Western-defined genres that separate and categorize. And I threaded several strands together, regardless of the genre that supposedly defined them, because to me, all those stances, those narrative stances, came together to define my world.
Is it easy to, for folks who are reading your book, is it easy for them to determine where the reality is and where you're taking creative license with the writing, or does it all just blend together?
I changed my voice with different strands. For example, with the Old Tom and Young Tom narrative, I made sure that that was in limited omniscience, and I made sure that it was third person, whereas there are some strands that are in first person. They're my own stories. And then there are some strands that have to do with nature or with history, and those, my narrative stance in those sections in part depended on how close I was to that history.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about Blonde Indian, an Alaska Native memoir with author Ernestine Hayes. She is also assistant professor of English at the University of Alaska Southeast in Juneau. Also joining us are Patience Fredrickson with the Talking Book Center with the State Library System, and Rayette Sterling, who works in the Anchorage Library. We're going to be talking more about the importance of libraries. Ernestine, tell us about what it was like to be growing up as a Native kid in Juneau. You were someone coming from both cultures, and you grew up in a time where there was segregation. Hurtful to any Native child to see some of the signs and some of the things that were going on. Was it particularly confusing for you to be both from the culture that was being shut out and the culture that was doing the shutting out?
Well, I wasn't from the culture that I'm not from the dominant culture, even though, well, I never knew my father, but it was just sort of understood that he wasn't from Juneau or wasn't from Alaska, I don't believe. But I was raised by my mother and my grandmother, and I lived in the Juneau Indian Village, and I identified myself as Native. I didn't have any non-Native relatives or role models, and so I don't consider that I came from the other culture. And what's probably more important, the people of the other culture didn't consider me from their culture either. It's sort of like the description at the beginning of the program where we say we learn so much by reading things or learning about people who live different lives or different lives that are different from our own. So whenever I went to school or to the movies or picked up a magazine, or there was no television at the time, but listened to the radio, I was always learning about people who were different from myself.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to join our conversation, there's a couple of ways that you can do that. You can call our statewide toll-free number, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, or locally in the Anchorage area, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. You lived for a time outside of Alaska. Tell us about that journey away and how you made your way back home.
When I was 15, my mother and I moved to California, and not a day went by that I didn't long for home, but I was there for 25 years, and I never came back home, not one time, although I tried a couple of times and got sort of close. Finally, when I turned 40, I said, let me go home or let me die with my thoughts facing north. I was broke. I was homeless. I was without a job. My children were either grown or living with their father, and it took me 8 months to get from San Francisco to Ketchikan. I lived in my car. I stood in food lines, and I slept in shelters. When I got to Ketchikan, I camped out from May to October. In October, I found a place to stay and got a job and sent for my mother and my sons. And 2 years later, I made it all the way back home to Juneau, and I think I love it more than if I'd never left.
What a triumph, and an amazing and admirable amount of work to get back home. I'm sure that you do have a much deeper appreciation for being there than if you had stayed the entire time. How was it, though, to be gone for that many years and to come back? Was there a lot of Had things changed dramatically from what you remembered as leaving there as a teenager?
Well, the physical structures, of course, had changed because in the meantime, there had been the oil boom in Anxa and so on. And when I got to Juneau, I didn't recognize the highway or any of the new buildings. It's almost everything had been built up that was on the main thoroughfare. But when I got to downtown and I walked up Capitol Avenue towards what is now Cope Park and over to Evergreen Cemetery, I realized that those old places were still there. And of course, the mountain was still the same, and the rainforest was still the same, and there were more eagles and ravens than when I had been a girl, so I recognized it as home.
Sounds fantastic. What a great homecoming. 1-800-478-8255 is the number if you'd like to join us statewide, or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. I want to get Patience and Rayette in here now for a moment, and then we'll go back to talking with Ernestine about her book, Blonde Indian, an Alaska Native Memoir. Patience, tell us about the Alaska Reads effort, this kind of really cool idea of getting the entire state in a discussion about one book. Is this unique to Alaska?
Oh, no, no. There have been many other statewide reading programs. There have been local reading programs, and they all focus on one book. And so what happens is a group decides what book to find, and Rayette was on the committee that reviewed books and came up with a short list and chose Ernestine's book. This group was chaired by Frank Sos, who is the writer laureate for Alaska right now, and Alaska Reads was his baby. He wanted to do this. He's been talking to the Alaska Center for the Book about it for the past year. And a small group of people in the Center for the Book worked with him to, as I said, you know, the committee that selected the book, and then the rest of us helped out with our different areas that we could come forward with. Anchorage has had a number of Anchorage Read programs. Mm. Rayette, what type of titles have you guys done?
So last year, Anchorage Reads was Don Reardon's The Raven. Mm. We've done Snow Child. We've done some national books. They all have sort of an Alaska theme. Frankenstein was one of the books because I don't know if you remember in the beginning of the book Frankenstein, he's sailing to Alaska. So Anchorage Reads has always had some sort of Alaskan theme, with the idea being that the entire community could kind of find a way to rally around this one book and use different themes to involve different threads of the community. And our programming, we do, there's the traditional author talks. Ernestine has been doing an amazing job traveling and talking about her process and her life and how she became a writer. So she'll come and talk at Lusac Library Thursday at 7 p.m. She's also meeting with high school students. Our programs are including a talk about identity and how we negotiate identity in the U.S. We've got a panel discussion for that. So really, when we pick a book, we try to find themes that are both academic, literate, but yet have sort of a fun, more Alaskan aspect, so we can pull out different things to create programs. Our final program, we're having a wrap-up and celebration of home, and Alaska is home. So at the Mountain View Library from 2 to 5 on the 28th, we're going to have a celebration with music and dance, and people are invited to bring a picnic for their family of food that reminds them of home. Mm. Ernestine's book talks a lot about what strikes me is the fish head soup and how she's walking and she remembers getting fish heads to make this soup, and how that feeling of home you carry with you. So she carries that with her through the food and throughout the book. And then when she finally comes home, it's that realization. So we'd like to invite all of Anchorage to celebrate what home is for them. So we're going to do that at the Mountain View Library. And
all right, that sounds like a fantastic idea, and certainly Mountain View is a great place to have that because there's such rich diversity. I mean, it's throughout the city and throughout the state, but Mountain View kind of encapsulates that diversity that we have here, which I love. I live right next door to that neighborhood, and I really love how diverse that area is. Let's go to the phones now. Noreen is in New Lotto. Hi, Noreen.
Hi. I'm calling in the importance of libraries. You know, when I first went to live in North Pole, we had a brand new library being set up, and it was the best place to go when my mom and dad were drinking. And then I worked at the library to help pay for my schooling at Children's Action. And I met at the time I was a young girl. I didn't know that I made friends and met a great writer. And he just knew how to punch my buttons. He knew exactly what questions to ask to hit my button and get me going. And his name was James Michener. And he was a great
wow.
guy. We really kicked it off together.
That'd be the guy to punch buttons.
Saying, you know, natives should have more authors and more libraries in their 200 and some communities. And I said, exactly what I'm thinking, James Michener. You know, and to push for libraries. Because some of the stories you hear from these people is raw. It was new to James Michener. And boy, some of the stories would just bring me down to tears, would just make me humble. If only they could write and put it down. You know, and then the Kindle comes out, and I'm like, holy cow. Man, I read 200 free books with a Kindle. Just like that. You know, I didn't have to carry that, you know, that heavy book around, or I didn't have to make my wrist raw from, you know, flipping, you know, holding it or flipping pages with my thumb. And that was something new. You know, it's really important that we have, you know, libraries for kids to go to when going on in their family, or to encourage them to, you know, write stories from their elders, because there's a lot of natives that can translate these they're very fluent and they could translate what their elders are talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Noreen, for bringing up some really important thoughts and issues. And I love your excitement about libraries, because I so feel the same way. The importance of libraries, I think, can't be overstated, and access for young people to books. And, you know, she brought up something that I hadn't thought of, as the library as a safe space, too, for kids. For me, it was a place to go to explore the world and, you know, immerse myself in books and a quiet place to read. But for some, it's much more than that. And that's important also, to have a safe space to read and explore your inner thoughts and your world. Has the Kindle been a helpful thing for libraries, or does it make it tougher for libraries to let society know how important they are?
Well, I think libraries are important. And the Kindle,
I do too.
The Kindle is just another, it's another method. We actually have books people can check out and download on their Kindle. So you don't have to, like, have money and buy your books from Amazon. You can get library books for your Kindle. And libraries have always been about more than just the books. It really is a place. It's a place mm-hmm. that welcomes everyone in the community. It's a place that connects you to your stories. It's a place where you can explore other people's stories. It's a place where you might run into people you wouldn't see in your daily walk through the world. So all of those things make libraries really, I think, integral to the community. And a healthy library means we have a healthy community where everyone is welcome and there's not that barrier. She also talked about really the power of literature and story to save lives. The power to see yourself or to get yourself out of a situation when you need to is just so foundational for how we survive and how we can be stronger individuals and get through the stuff that we need to get through.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And frankly, at this point in time, I'm actually head of library development for the State Library as well as the Talking Book Center. At this point, we give out grants to 105 public libraries, and there are over 300 communities. So only about a third of our communities have come together to develop public libraries. And that's because in many places, there may be no strong city government, or it's very, very, they just don't have the money to use for that. And we have seen over the years the importance of libraries in people's lives. For example, we received a grant application from a community in the interior, and the librarian was asking us for money to help her buy bread, butter, and jam because she fed the kids every day after school. They were coming home from school hungry, and she asked us for money to help feed the children in her community. Unfortunately, our grant funds are not allowed to be used that way, but we did find other programs for her to use. So it's not just spiritual or intellectual well-being. Sometimes it's even physical well-being.
Absolutely. And to me, libraries get at sort of the essence of equality in a community, because everyone can go there, everyone has access to the same reading material, and can educate themselves in the same way. Mm-hmm. And help us all understand ourselves a little better. Let's go back to the phones just for a moment. Stephanie is in Fairbanks. Hi, Stephanie.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Is Ernestine still there?
Yes, she is.
Okay, I called just to say hi and thank you for your book. And I'm a native from the Lower 48, been in Alaska about 14 years, and have a real hard time all my life with what my identity was, coming from three or four tribes and a lot of European heritage. And I really felt that writing, I'm a poet and I write art research articles, and I really found a place in Alaska where I felt accepted for who I was, and a group of people who don't really even care where you come from or what tribe you are, as long as your heart is in a good place. And just being in Alaska and be able to write about that and to write about the journey and to write about all your different experiences in terms of identity. But I never even knew what my cultural identity was until I grew up. And so I didn't have strong elders to go to every time I was confused. So I just wanted to thank Ernestine for having the courage to write her book and keep on going. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. I really appreciate your words, and I can definitely relate to what you say about not knowing where we belong and finally coming to a place and being part of a community where we know we belong. And it's reciprocal. It's not only that you feel you belong there, but it's also that the place and the people also feel that you belong, and I can hear that that's a real strength for you, and I appreciate that, and I really encourage you to continue writing, because we all have a story that only we can tell, and I look forward to reading yours.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephanie, for a wonderful call, and I'm certainly happy to hear that she found an acceptance here in Alaska. That makes me proud of all of us, so good on us, Alaska. If you'd like to join our conversation, we are discussing Ernestine Hayes' book, Blonde Indian, an Alaska Native memoir, and we're also talking about the importance of libraries and access to books and the equality that can come from that. Our numbers statewide are 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or in Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email your questions to talk@alaskapublic.org. Ernestine, when did you first realize that you wanted to be a writer? Did it come to you all at once, or was it sort of a gradual process?
Well, as the only child of a single mother who read a lot, my mother read all the time, and it was essentially my only choice to also read. And I spent a lot of time in the library when I was a girl, the little library that is now the Juno Douglas City Museum. And I remember everything about it. I wrote at things. I think the easiest, best, most sure way to become a writer is to read a lot. And since I read a lot, I also had an impulse to write, and I wrote at things all the time, and I fancied myself that I could write poetry or a novel or short stories, but I didn't envision myself as someone who could be a published writer or be a serious writer until at the age of 50, I enrolled at the University of Alaska Southeast in Juneau. And when I took composition and creative writing classes, I learned discipline. And that's what made me a writer.
It is all about discipline,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're touring around the state with your book, which is so exciting. What do you want the conversation to be when you're visiting communities?
I hope that, first of all, that in each community and at each event that I provide whatever the community feels is best for that community at that time. I hope to hear some stories of other stories. I like sharing my own, but I also like hearing stories from other people. And I hope to bring to the table the truth of our histories and acknowledge that we have shared history, and only by dealing with our shared history and the implications and all those things that have brought us to where we are, and only doing that we'll have a shared future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the importance of literature today, and also speaking with Ernestine Hayes, the author of Blonde Indian, as she is embarking on a tour around Alaska to have this conversation about her memoir and about who we all are as a collective community. And we'll take your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Alaska Regional Hospital. With hospital-wide renovations and upgrades, it's a brand new day at Alaska Regional Hospital.
Alaska's tobacco quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're going to go back to the phones. Christine is in Talkeetna. Hi, Christine.
Hi.
Did you have a question?
Yes. Well, thanks, first of all, for having Ms. Hayes on the air. I've often said that I think her book is one of the most important and beautiful books to come out of Alaska, so it's great to hear her on statewide radio. Mm. And my question for Ernestine, before I ask it, if you have any spare time, I would also love to hear Ernestine read a little bit from Blonde Indian. For those who may not have read it or heard of it, it's a beautiful book to hear on the air. But my question, which I can take off the air, would be to ask Ernestine to talk a little bit about the lineage that she is writing out of, who she considers to be authors who were pivotal for her to read as she was coming into her identity as a writer, and most specifically any of Indigenous American writers in particular. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for that, for your kind words, Christine. I really appreciate that. And I have to say probably that at first when I read Linda Hogan, and that was a revelation to me, Gloria Bird, and when I discovered Sherman Alexie, I think that gave me the freedom to begin to speak out and to say the truth as I saw it. And I was really encouraged by what seemed to me to be his bravado and his courage. So I think reading Sherman Alexie and some of his poetry was what really liberated me and helped me to find my voice.
Sherman Alexie is, yes, one of my favorites too. He's, I love his irreverence, and he just says what he wants to say, and you can take it or leave it. If you want to join our conversation, the numbers are 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK, or in Anchorage, 550-8422. Or you can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Ernestine, your speaking schedule in Anchorage includes schools, but also Beans Cafe, McLaughlin Youth Center. Yesterday you spoke at Highland Correctional Center. Did you decide on where to talk about your book and your life? And what was the response that you had at Highland yesterday? Was this your idea to go to these places, or how did that get decided on?
Yes, I specifically asked to visit places like Beans Cafe and Highland Correctional Center, where sometimes we feel that the voices are not heard and they might need a little extra encouragement to tell their stories. Yesterday when I visited Highland, I was very gratified, and the women there not only had comments and were quick to tell me that it encouraged them and gave them hope for a future, but I shared some of my personal stories with them because I've been in those places and I've had those needs and I've felt my voice oppressed and silenced many times, and to hear someone say the words that I wish I would have heard is one of the most important things that I can give.
So it sounds like giving back is a really important aspect of your whole life philosophy and your work as a writer. How has it been in other communities? You've started the tour in January. What's the conversation been like in other places?
Well, I've gone to Ketchikan, Petersburg, Haines, and I got snowed out of Skagway, and then I came here to Anchorage, and so far, the people have been extremely welcoming and very warm, and each place is a little bit different, but I do take a lot of satisfaction when people tell me one thing that I take a lot of satisfaction is when people, for instance, Nora Downhower, who is probably, you know, she's such a giant in Alaska literature. When she read my manuscript, she put her hand on her heart and said, "It's just like reading my story." Because people who lived in the 20th century in Southeast Alaska and are native, we all went through sort of a degree of the same thing. And so that's important to me when I hear people say that. And the other thing that I love to hear people say is that it is encouraging them to write their stories.
Mm. Well, that to me is really illustrates what success you're having then out there. If you're not only inspiring people to read, but also to write, that's huge. So great. It sounds like this tour is having exactly the impact that it's supposed to have, which is getting everybody talking and also writing. Yay. So back to our librarians here for a moment. Patience, tell us about the Talking Book Center. Alaska partners with the National Library Service for the Blind and also the Utah State Library. How did that particular collaboration come together?
Well, the Talking Book Center, there's a Talking Book Center in every state, mm-hmm. and the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped is part of the Library of Congress. And for over 80 years, they have been providing books on records and then recorded cassettes and now on digital media for people who are blind or physically handicapped who cannot read standard print. And every state library has partnered with the National Library Service, which we call NLS, to provide this program. The feds provide the books and the playback equipment, and we provide staff and space. unfortunately, here in Alaska, due to the budget cuts, we have determined that it is actually cheaper for us to contract with the Utah State Library to provide talking book service in Alaska. And with the ongoing budget cuts, we had to make that choice. It's the exact same set of books. It's the exact same equipment. And so we transferred our files to Utah, and we are paying them to provide this service to Alaskans. It's a lot like Netflix. All of our patrons receive their books and machines in the mail, free matter for the blind. And so for Alaskans, especially Alaskans living outside of Anchorage, there's no difference. They're just getting their books in the mail from Utah instead of from Anchorage. The people in Anchorage are a little bit impacted in that they like to come by and drop off the books and talk to the librarians. And unfortunately, we're closing our doors. And we're moving down to Juneau. Our office is going to be part of the new Andrew P. Kashevaroff State Library Archives and Museums building that's going up in Juneau and is slated to open in May. It's a huge facility, and we only have 4 state library employees left in Anchorage, and so our jobs are moving.
Mm. Wow. Well, Rayette, I wanted to ask about the remodeling that happened recently at the Anchorage Library and about the longevity and the health of the system and what that may say about the future of libraries, not only in Anchorage but also across the state. It sounds like there's a little bit of contraction from what patients is saying, but what's the health overall?
Boy, the library depends a lot on community support, so we're healthy if our community is healthy and supporting us. Our renovation at LUSAC is ongoing. We plan to be finished early 2017. The idea behind the renovation is to make the building more accessible, so the entryway will be from the ground floor. Folks will have much, much easier access to move through the building. We will have better ADA compliance through the building. And the design is really... people use libraries for different things now. So many people come to us for their computer access, or they bring their devices with us. So part of this remodel is really to get us up to speed with where we need to be to serve the needs of our community.
Libraries have changed a lot. My high school librarian was a terrifying woman named Mrs. Hochstetler. The kids unkindly called her Hawkeye because she could see you even over the stacks if you were thinking about even breathing too loud. Libraries are so different today. Tell us about some of the less somber events that are taking place in Anchorage and across the state.
Ooh, we've got a bunch of stuff happening. So as part of the Anchorage Reads portion of Alaska Reads, as I shared with you, we're having an author talk. We are having a Spam and Pilot Bread competition. As we were developing our programming, we were trying to think, well, what says Alaska to a broad range of people? What's their home food? And we came up with the idea of Spam
not
and Pilot
spam.
Bread.
No. Salmon, not Spam, please.
Well, it depends on where you are, but... So we're having this competition. People can drop off their recipes to any branch library, or they can email me, and that is sterlingrs@muni.org. The recipe needs to have Spam or Pilot Bread. There's bonus points if you include both of those in your recipe. So they're going to send in the recipes by the 20th. We're going to print up recipe cards to hand out at the event on the 28th. And then we have celebrity judges who will taste their concoctions and pick a winner. So that should be our big fun event to kind of celebrate that this whole community gets together and enjoys our Alaskan comfort food.
Yikes. Well, we are going to benefit from Ernestine reading for us in just a moment. But before she does, I want to build up a little excitement about that. Before she does, let's hear from Bob in Sitka. Hi, Bob.
Yes, hello. Yes, my name is Bob. I'm from Sitka, Alaska. I'm very happy to live in a community where we just opened up a brand new library, a remodeled library. Beautiful place. It's a great asset to the community, and we're very fortunate to have it. Also, I'd like to say hello to Ernestine Hayes as well. And actually, the reason I want to talk of Alaska is I'm the older Tlingit person, and throughout my life, I've heard different generations talk about many negative things of suicide, alcohol, drug abuse, but very little about what to do about it. So it would be great if the artists in Alaska would turn on the lights, you know, of spirit. If and also the arts, you know, a camera is very inexpensive now, and if more people out in the village and everybody who has cameras, you know, they could take photos of our way of life, and also I believe we're in a kind of a renaissance. Most of the populations are equal or close to where we were at contact, and so it's time to celebrate our renaissance and turn on our lights so that we take our rightful place in society, you know, and also show people who we are as a people, and once we do that, I'd like to end by saying is about ignorance. We're pretty ignorant about different cultures, and it's time we get to know each other. And once we do that, that ignorance is set aside, and we all take our rightful place in society. So thank you for this program today, anyway.
Thank you, Bob, for your comments, and ending on a hopeful note that we all should absolutely take our rightful place as equal human beings in our society collectively. Ernestine, that's kind of your mission, is going around and promoting this idea of knowing who you are and embracing that. And with that thought in mind, let's have you read a bit from your book. That would be really wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. One of my first jobs after I came back home to Juneau was at a Native theater where we told old stories and sang and drummed old songs. At the end of each performance, we stood in a line on the stage and introduced ourselves in our native language and then translated what we had just said. I would say, Tlingitk inach sanga tlacht yuchattu asakwa. My Tlingit name is Sankalakht. Dlaitka kenach Ernestine Hayes Yuchatduasak. My white man name is Ernestine Hayes. Ch'ak na ayachat, I am eagle. Kogontan ayachat, I am of the Burnt House People Clan. Guchit ayachat, I belong to the Wolf House. Gunach teidi dachchan hatsati, I am a grandchild of the Gunachtedi. Yun Washa, I am a Kogwantan woman. Sheetka Kwan, my clan springs from Sitka. The woman standing next to me would step forward and say, Tlingit k'enach kastin yuchatu asakwa chukane di ayachat. I am of the people from the grassy place, and I belong to Glacier Bay. And I love to hear her say that, for it describes our relationship to the land, who our land now belongs to, or if land can even be owned, is a question for politicians and philosophers. But we belong to the land. There is not one Tlingit person, from the most modern corporate executive to the most unsophisticated villager, from the oldest great-grandparent whose dim eyes can see only memories, to the youngest child who has just learned to form the words, who will not say, this is our land, for we still belong to it. We belong to Tlingit Ani. we can't help but place our love there. Remember that the land is inspirited. It is quickened. When, as you conduct your life, you chance to see an eagle or a wolf or a bear, remember that it, too, is conducting its life, and it sees you as well, as does a tree, and the forest itself, the very land, sees you. When you remember this and feel this and know this, you will want to hug the land. You will want to embrace it. And when that happens, you can be sure that the land feels the same way about you. The land loves you. She misses her children.
Wow. Thank you for that beautiful reading from what is obviously a very, very powerful work and recognition of the importance of respect for the land. And do you think that when we think about some of what's happened in the larger society, is it a loss from that connection, that understanding of how connected we are? I grew up in generations of farmers, so people that really understood how important the land were as well. But do you think some of that's been lost, and that is what becomes sort of a spiritual longing for people, is that they somehow lose that connection to what really is the most important, the land?
I absolutely agree. And it's not just that something has come between the human awareness of the connection to the land and everything on it, but it's also the loss of the recognition, the human knowledge that everything is full of life, that we're surrounded by life. And I think that in this society today, that has been discouraged, and we have so much that's come between us, and we're taught to look through a consumer lens rather than as humans. I truly believe that a lot of what is now perceived as an indigenous way of looking at the world is actually the human way of looking at the world.
I absolutely agree, and I'm so happy to hear you say that, because I think that it's important for people to recognize that everyone can have that connection if they pay attention, get quiet, and listen. They can have that connection. You don't have to come from a particular place in order to have that connection to our planet. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Elise is in Juneau. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. Ernestine, I have to tell you, I had goosebumps hearing you read, and I'm just such a fan of your work, and I'm hoping you can tell us if you have any other books coming out, if they'll be in a similar vein as Blonde Indian, or if it will be something different. But I'm just always so moved to read your words or to hear your words, and I'm just hoping that there's more to come. And I can take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the question. You beat me to it.
Thank you, Elise. Elise is a friend of mine and a colleague, but I promise I didn't pay her to...
I did.
But yes, I have a book coming out in fall 2016 by the University of Washington Press, and the title is The Tao of Raven, an Alaska Native Memoir. And it carries forward my life, the memoir portion of Blonde Indian, what happened after I came back home. And it also carries forward Old Tom's life. And so its structure is very similar to Blonde Indian.
All right. Well, we are going to take one more quick little break, and when we come back, we'll take your questions and continue our conversation with our state librarians and Ernestine Hayes, author of Blonde Indian.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from your friends, family, and neighbors at Raven, Alaska, connecting over 100 communities across the state. Find out more at flyraven.com.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, file your 2016 PFD application today. 2, receive a confirmation of filing. And 3, sign electronically with your secure My Alaska account. Visit pfd.alaska.gov for more information. And remember, the deadline to apply is Thursday, March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're in the final stretch here, and I have so many questions. Ernestine, your book is broken into 4 sections. Is that sort of a reflection of the seasons, or what was the thinking behind that?
Each section of Blonde Indian is meant to symbolize, represent a step in a particular cycle, and the annual cycle is one of them, and the title of the sections also suggests the cycle of the evolution of the land from a glacier through the forest to the bog. Also, the human cycle from birth through the stages of life to death, and the diurnal cycle from evening and nighttime to spring. And each of those steps is referred to in the italicized first page of each section. So you'll notice that it begins with summer, because that's, we're Alaskans, and we know that's when the year begins.
Yes, summer, glorious summer. Do you have an ideal audience in your mind when you go to speak about your book, or are you hoping for great diversity to help build cross-cultural understanding and respect, or do you just hope for a friendly crowd?
Well, I hope for a crowd. And I love it when it's a diverse audience, and in age and in ethnicity and how long they've been in Alaska and so on, because that's the richest and strongest part of being an Alaskan.
Patience and Rayette, back to you, our librarians here in the studio. How do you see libraries sort of fitting into that discussion of race and equality, and what should the role be in promoting respect and understanding?
One of the new roles of libraries is to serve as community centers, and there's much programming going on around that. There is the Harwood Institute, in which they've trained librarians to bring community members in to discuss issues of common concern. Certainly the programming that we do for adults has the theme of their lives and what their needs are, and author programs are certainly part of that. Rayette, what about in Anchorage?
So in Anchorage, we've held some dialogues and hosted some dialogues. We've worked with the UAA APU Books of the Year to do some conversations around some of these more difficult issues. As part of Alaska Reads, we'll be having a dialogue on negotiating race in the United States. We have a Yupik woman, African-American woman, and a European-American that are going to talk about how we create that identity and what that means, how you negotiate being who you are in the dominant culture. So we try to be a place where people can feel safe and where people can engage and have that dialogue in an environment that is non-judgmental. As Ernestine says, we all have our stories and we all carry our stories with us. So a library is a perfect place where we can share those stories with each other.
Ernestine, I have kind of a selfish question now. I have combined 6 grandchildren and step-grandchildren. 3 of them are half Tlingit, half white. 2 of them are African-American and Ojibwe. What advice do you have for this grandmother about how to keep my grandkids, how to help them understand their world and their place in it? And how do you want that conversation to look in the future?
That is a very deep question. My grandmother I can say how my grandmother did it for me, and she was always telling me to remember who I am, remember who you are. She always said that, but she also described my world to me. In the past couple of days, I've read a short excerpt about treating spiders with respect and saving them and so on. And I feel that rather than lecturing me or giving me a talk, she showed me how to relate to my world. And in showing me that about small things, I learned that the whole world was important and to be cared for and full of love and to be respected. So I think remember who you are, tell your children and grandchildren who they are and to remember who they are, and most especially describe the world for them, because that's how they'll see the world.
Well, thank you so much for that. And I know that your new book is going to be released in the fall in 2016, The Tao of Raven, also kind of a carry-on of Blonde Indian. So get out there and get the books. Where is your next stop on your speaking tour?
Well, today we're going to Palmer, to the Matsu Youth Facility, and then to Wasilla, to the Dorothy Page Museum. And then we'll be in Fireside Books tomorrow evening in Palmer, Lusac Library on Thursday, Polaris High School, Bagage Middle School, Beans Cafe on Friday, and McLaughlin Youth Center, and a couple other places on Saturday. And on Sunday, I'm flying to Nome.
Wow, this is kind of the whirlwind tour for you. Librarians, Rayette, and Patience, do you want to get a plug in for a couple of things?
Well, for one thing you might want to take a look at is the Alaska Center for the Book webpage. One of the items on the gray bar is Alaska Reads 2016. That has a biography of Ernestine, posters and bookmarks about the program, also the list of her itinerary. So far, the poster there shows all the places she's going physically. I'm in the process of setting up 3 video conferences with 18 other libraries statewide. That'll be happening in March due to scheduling issues. So Ernestine will be going to the Juneau Public Library, and she will do an OWL video conference that's online with libraries. And so she'll be reaching out to 18 more communities, including Talkeetna. I think one of the people who called in from Talkeetna might be interested to drop into that event at her library.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here. Thank you so much, Ernestine Hayes, author of Blonde Indian, an Alaska Native memoir, and the upcoming book, The Tao of Raven. Thank you so much for being with us today and for reading and for your tour of Alaska and helping us all have a better understanding of ourselves and each other. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you, Patience and Rayette, for being here too to talk about the importance of libraries. Thanks to Dave Waldron, our engineer extraordinaire, and Josh Edge on phones. And thank you for joining us for Talk of Alaska today. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Elder Mentor Program is designed to bring the wisdom, cultural values, and resilience of Alaskan elders into the classroom and into the community by supporting educators and children. They're looking for low-income elders, age 55 or older, to serve as positive, supportive role models for children. Elder Mentors serve through the National Senior Corps Program. Mentor information at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1st, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.